kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to look at the artificial sweetener, sucralose, and why you should be concerned about it. Good news about how eating right promotes the ability to develop a stronger immune system with the bacteria in your gut. New information on glycation, I've talked about a lot about that, but this is some new information about how it causes us to age prematurely. Also, wheat as an endocrine disruptor. Now, this is something brand new. It's elevated prolactin in diseases of the intestine. So then when you eat that sandwich or that piece of toast or bagel and you feel a little bloating, indigestion, now we know why. Also, to protect your brain, we're going to talk about turmeric for dementia and premature death and many more things. From our environmental segment today, we're going to look at the latest on radioactivity in the water from Fukushima in a major area, major river in British Columbia on the West Coast. That means it's hitting up the whole west coast of the United States as well. But this is interesting because they've actually measured it and know that it only came from there. It's not background radiation. So I'll give you the latest on that. Also, from our public health segment, America's Most Dangerous Pill. And I don't know that I'll have time to get to it, but they've just found a megalithic ruin in Russia, in Siberia. And it's the largest blocks of cut stone ever discovered. I mean, these are huge. These are 3,000 tons each. And they're just gigantic. We're talking about bigger than the pyramids. And yet it's way earlier than any other stone that is known to have been cut. This is interesting. This tells you, well, who did it and how they do it. And so the archaeologist is giving us some insight on this. So I'll, if time permits, I'll deal with that. Let's begin. And my guest, David Crowe, he's a really good science writer. And we're going to talk about commercialization of science, why you can't trust what so much of science is saying, no matter what it's saying about, because the people in power have managed to co-opt it. So if they don't want you to believe that global warming is real, then it can't be real because they've hired scientists who say it's not real and they've published articles saying it's not real. If they want you to believe that genetically modified foods are good and safe and there's no problem, well, they control the science. So that's why so many people are confused, even about global warming. So we'll deal with that. There's a lot of concern about sweeteners, regular sweeteners, because they can contribute to a myriad of diseases, heart disease and cancer, obesity and tooth decay. So then people think, well, what about things like sucralose? This is the latest from the Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health, a critical review. The article is entitled Sucralose, a Synthetic Organochlorine Sweetener, an Overview of Biological Issues. And here's what it says, and this is important because this is from the National Institutes of Health. Quote, this is from the federal government. It will create alterations in insulin, in blood glucose, in glucagon-like peptide levels, the metabolism of sucralose in the gastrointestinal tract, tract to the metabolites whose identity and safety profile are unknown. That's a big one. Induction of cytochrome P450 and P-glycoprotein in the gastrointestinal tract to levels that may limit the bioavailability of therapeutic drugs. in lay language, that means that this could interfere with the usefulness of a medication that you may be taking. Reduction in the number and balance of beneficial bacteria in the gastrointestinal tract, that's really serious, because that means the good bacteria your body benefits from that helps control your immune system, that keeps you healthy, could be upset. The histopathological findings in gastrointestinal tract, including lymphocytic infiltrates into epithelium, epithelial scarring, mild depletion of globulate cells, and glandular disorganization in the colon. Lay language, this means that this is really playing havoc with your lymphatic system and your epithelium, the lining of your arteries. Decomposition and generalization, which is, it's including in baking, and mutagenic alterations using several types of bioassays, end quote. So, this is from the National Institutes of Health, published in a peer-reviewed journal of toxicology, showing you that if you're eating something that's baked with this, or made with this, it's creating mutagens. So it's altering your blood sugar level and your glucose level, and it's impacting peptides, and it's playing havoc with your good bacteria, and it's causing mutagens. Well, why aren't we told this? Why haven't any of the television stations banned this from being aired? This product should not be used. This product should be banned. So we're giving you the latest. And interesting, one branch of the federal government, the National Institutes of Health, has released this information. But the FDA, another branch, fully in the pocket of the special interest group, promotes it as safe. Microbes, and microbes means bacteria, help fight infection. This is from California Institute of Technology, published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Host and Microbe. Quote, the human relationship with microbiological life is complicated. At almost any supermarket, you can pick up both antibacterial soap and probiotic yogurt during the same shopping trip. Although there are types of bacteria that can make us sick, Caltech professor of biology and biological engineering and his team are most interested in the thousands of other bacteria, many already living inside our bodies, that actually keep us healthy. And then it goes on to talk about what they discovered. And what they discovered is that the bacteria, the microbes, actually help develop immune cells when they're good bacteria. So let's just make this as simple as possible. Your body produces two types of bacteria, those which are constructive and those which are destructive, good and bad. The good bacteria come when you eat anything that's a healthy ferment, such as soybean, like miso, or tempeh, or natto, or sauerkraut, or some of the other fermented foods. Those are all good. On the other hand, you have bad bacteria. And bad bacteria come when you have alcohol, or sugar, or high fructose corn syrup. Those are all really destructive. Now, when you have bad bacteria, you weaken the immune system. When you have good bacteria, you strengthen the immune system. And that is important. That's the latest on that. Scientists at the Royal Holloway University of London found that grapefruits are good for your kidneys, and especially to prevent kidney cysts. Now, there is a substance, I've talked about it many times, that's found in grapefruit. Mainly, that's why I believe in using the entire grapefruit, the skin, the seed in particular. In fact, that's where you get a lot, and the white pulp. The white pulp is very important for blood vessels. It helps protect you against splotchy and spider veins and increases the health of the skin and collagen. That's the white part that everyone peels and throws away. They're actually peeling 90% of what's good about the grapefruit. And we don't eat the seeds. We should. We don't eat the white pulp. We should. we don't eat juice the skin, we should, because there are phytochemicals in there. There is also what is called narin, N-A-R-I-N, narin, genin, G-E-N-I-N, narigenin. Now, narigenin, they found in the grapefruit. By the way, it's also in oranges, limes, and lemons, and kumquats. It blocks the formation of kidney cysts. And that occurs in polycystic kidney disease. And by regulating the PKD2 protein responsible for the condition. So it also can lower blood pressure. And that's important. Professor Roger Wims, School of Biological Sciences, said, quote, "This discovery is vital in helping us understand how polycystic kidney disease may be controlled and ultimately treated." How about that? Not a drug, not surgery, grapefruits. Really important. Now, I'll tell you, one of the things that you can do with grapefruits, you can juice the whole grapefruit, put a teaspoon of Manuka honey in, the most powerful healing honey in the world, and then put in some vitamin C and about 20 drops of wild oregano oil, 1,000 milligrams, which is one tablet, of olive leaf extract, and then some green apple, and drink that. You talk about helping you stimulate the immune system, killing bacteria and viruses, protecting against cold and flu. That'll do it. When I'm sitting across some people, I'm looking at their skin, their nails, the coating on their tongue, the ridges in the tongue, the bags under the eyes. All of these are indicators. But what you're seeing on the outside of a person is only a mirror of what's happening on the inside. And what's happening on the inside is that we're aging prematurely, much faster than what we should. And it's because of a simple process called advanced glycation. Gly, G-L-Y, cation, C-A-T-I-O-N, end products. These are molecules that form when sugar molecules bind to proteins and lipids in the body. Let's just call it glycation for simple. Now, glycation is a normal part of aging. But once you start getting glycation, you're also going to get cataracts, atherosclerosis, kidney failure, wrinkles. All these are from glycation. But the good news is that we can block glycation. We can slow it down. First, stop eating foods that are cooked at high temperatures. Deep fried, barbecued, grilled. The browning. Remember, the browning of a food, like the browning of potato chips, or toast, or a bagel. That is what causes the proteins to combine with the sugars. And that is why the standard American diet is unhealthy. In fact, a study just published uncovered an increased risk of prostate cancer among men who ate well-done fish, either by pan-frying or broiling or grilling. Men who ate fish cooked at a low temperature had no greater risk. Now, an earlier study, researchers from UCLA reported an increased risk of advanced prostate cancer in men who consumed higher amounts of hamburgers, grilled red meat, processed meat, and well-done meat. And yet in America, we're told that the grilling and the hard cooking is better. It isn't. But all those cooking shows emphasize that. In fact, I was watching to see what they were advocating on one of these cooking shows, and they were showing how people are making their special meat jerkies and or their pork jerky or some well-done pork, ribs, for example, barbecued. And sometimes they'll put these in an oven for as long as 12 hours. You're creating massive amounts of glycation products then. So don't eat any, if you're eating animal products, don't eat any animal products that are broiled, deep fried, grilled because you're going to end up advancing your own aging process. And for those who don't think it's a big deal, have you spent time helping a person with Alzheimer's? Because one of the ways you get Alzheimer's, the accumulation of amyloids, the brain plaques that characterize Alzheimer's disease, is by eating well-done food. That's how it happens. In fact, researchers at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, New York, found a high level of these advanced glycation end products, as well as amyloid beta deposits in the brains of mice that were given a diet high in these cooked foods. Now, as an example of this, there were two sets of rats, one given the standard rat pellet, rat chow, and another group given that I gave, raw food diet. And at the end of the normal lifespan, you saw none of the diseases of aging in the group given the raw food diet. I also gave them a lot of sprouts and juices every day, but they lived up to 30% longer. So it made an enormous difference. One way to cutting down on is to cut down the meat that you're eating, then cut down on the cooking of the meat, then start to include a nutrient. It's a form of vitamin B1. It's called pyridoxal 5-phosphate. Also, B6, I should say, is pyridoxal 5-phosphate and a form of B1 that can help reduce glycation. So let's say you have someone in your family and they're not going to change what they're eating, not going to change how it's prepared. Then just ask them to take two nutrients each day. There are more. You know, definitely L-carnosine is important because that will help interfere with glycation in a tremendous way. And it also reduces the formation of damaging reactive oxygen species, meaning it slows down the aging of your telomeres and chromosomes. But also benfometamine, amine. That's a form of the B1. So that'll help. All right, and that's what we want. We want people to live a longer life. Also, a study shows that organic milk has a better balance of healthy fats and is healthier from the Natural Society. Now, common sense tells us organic products are better for us than non-organics. The science-based evidence is something lacking sometimes. We know vegetables sprayed with pesticides carry more health risks than those that do not. But what about when it comes to things like dairy cows and the milk they produce? One new study sought to determine scientifically if organic milk was better than conventional milk. And they were successful. The study was published in the major and respected journal PLOS ONE. They analyzed essential fatty acids in organic whole milk and conventionally produced milk. The researchers found organic milk contained a far better balance of omega-3 and 6 fatty acids, likely due to the diet of the cattle eating more grasses, organic grasses, where the others eat a lot of processed, genetically engineered food. Now, according to USDA organic labeling procedures, organic milk-producing cows must be given a certain amount of time each day to graze in grasses. You don't find that with your typical corn, antibiotic, growth hormone, regular cows. So, that's the idea. Now the research is in. Organic milk is better than traditional milk. Now, in fact, most people get 10 times more omega-6 fats than omega-3. Bad. So you don't want that. So let's say you don't care. You don't care. You're not going to go to a health food store or food co-op. We got a lot of good food co-ops in the New York area. But instead, you want just milk. Okay, here's what you're getting. You're getting a very high ratio of organic, the omega-6 fatty acids that you don't want. You're getting more of them. Also, you're getting some things you didn't know were in that non-organic milk. You're getting some painkillers, antibiotics and other medications. That is correct. There's all kinds of things in regular milk. And finally, to help us with our brain in premature aging, a new study in Cellular Physiology and Biochemistry, the article is entitled Dietary Curcumin Ameliorates Age-Related Cerebrovascular Dysfunction Through the AMPK Uncoupling Protein 2 Pathways. In lay language, simple. Age-related cerebrovascular dysfunction is occurring at an epidemic scale in all Western countries. That's going to give you a stroke, the cerebral amyloid, angiopathy, cognitive decline, neurodegenerative diseases. Well, presently, there's no, I repeat, no conventional medical interventions are capable of providing effective solutions, and none have been found to reverse underlying pathologies in conditions whose trajectories are generally characterized as incurable. A study was conducted using a rat model, 24-month study, and they found that curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N, from turmeric, quote, was able to have remarkable restoration, let me repeat that, remarkable restoration of the impaired cerebrovascular endothelium-dependent vasorelaxation. That means, in lay language, the ability of the blood vessels to naturally relax. And they observed that it also promotes ENOS and AMPK phosphorylation, increases nitric oxide bioavailability, and that in the inner lining of the blood vessels, the endothelium, to fully dilate, that reduces cardiovascular hypertension, reduces damage to the arteries, all good. So, a good study showing that curcumin can make an enormous difference. Now, I just wanted to see how many other articles from the peer review mainstream journal are out there on curcumin and on the brain. 1,597 scientific abstracts from the National Library of Medicine on the health value of turmeric or curcumin in over 600 health conditions. So, it's not simply one miracle that it does. It does many things. It's anti-inflammatory. It's a great anti-cytotoxic. It's great neuro-restorative. It's metal chelating, chelates out heavy metals. And turmeric, of course, is not the only natural substance. It's been proven to be a value in neurodegenerative conditions. How about coconut oil? Coconut oil is about 66% medium-chain triglycerides by weight. It's capable of improving symptoms of cognitive decline in those who are suffering from dementia by increasing brain-boosting ketone bodies. And I've seen it within hours. Coca, that's right, just simple coca. It's been found through the proanthocyanidins to protect against lipid peroxidation associated with neuron cell death. Sage, a simple herb, has therapeutic benefit for mild to moderate Alzheimer's. Folic acid, very important as a methylating agent. For helping prevent disease, and resveratrol, also very important, getting it from grapes and chocolate. On Alzheimer's, there are 16 separate studies in the mainstream peer-reviewed literature on resveratrol helping with the brain, ginkgo biloba, and saffron. Saffron's an herb, very expensive herb, but it doesn't take a lot, and it's terrific for mild to moderate Alzheimer's. So, there's a lot of good things that we can do. And with more and more of the population suffering from these conditions that they never thought a thing about when they were younger, now we're looking for natural non-toxic to help them. I'm Gary Knoll, and let's take a moment and look at the environment. This is from Larry Pine from the Vancouver Sun newspaper. Quote, discovery of Fukushima radioactivity raises concerns for local marine life and the effect it may have on humans. A radioactive metal from the Fukushima nuclear plant disaster in Japan has been discovered in the Fraser Valley, causing researchers to raise the alarm about the long-term impact of radiation on British Columbia's west coast. Examination of a soil sample from Kilby Provincial Park has, for the first time in this province, found cesium-134, further evidence of Fukushima's radioactivity being transported to Canada by air and water. Quote, "That was a surprise," said Juan Alvela, a professor in the School of Resource Environmental Management at the Simon Fraser University. "It means there are still emissions and trans-Pacific air pollution. It's a concern to us. This is an international issue." Now, there's two types of to be concerned of the cesium. One is 134 with a half-life of 2 years. By the way, just so you understand this, that means that its radioactivity is reduced by half during that time. And but the more problematic one is cesium-137. That half-life is 30 years, and it bioaccumulates in the food chain. So it's going to be around longer than most people are going to be alive. And now they're finding it in killer whales and in other mammals. So it's serious. But we didn't see any of this in the United States, and that's unfortunate. We should have. Next up, and then I'm going to ask for a little our talkback segment where you have a chance to call in and share your comments, your thoughts, your questions, and your points of view. This is from Marcel Fagiani and Dr. Michael White. It's a paper that I read on organizational psychopaths. Who are they? How to protect your organization from them? It was a very interesting paper, but let me just summarize what they say. Quote, "In North America alone, conservative estimates pegs the number of psychopaths to be in the range of 2 million. Here's how you identify them. They have no concern for the feelings of others, complete disregard for any sense of social obligation, egocentric and lack insight of any sense of responsibility or consequence. Emotions are almost non-existent, and any emotion signs are superficial, shallow, and insincere. They're considered callous, manipulative, and incapable of forming lasting relationships, devoid of meaningful love, let alone showing any kind of meaningful love. Spends time and energy on matters that only matter to them, devoid of genuine altruism. Also, here's another way of identifying them within organizations. Public humiliation of others, high propensity of having temper tantrums or ridiculing work performance, malicious spreading of lies, intentional deceit, remorseless or devoid of guilt, frequently lies to push their own point, rapidly shifts between emotions used to manipulate people or cause high anxiety, intentionally isolates persons from organizational resources, quick to blame others for mistakes or for incomplete work even though he or she is guilty, encourages co-workers to torment, alienate, harass, or humiliate other peers, takes credit for other people's accomplishments, steals or sabotages other people's work, refuses to take responsibility for misjudgments or errors, threatens any perceived enemy with job loss or discipline in order to taint employees' files, sets unrealistic or unachievable job expectations, setting employees up for failure, refuses to provide adequate training or instructions to singled out victims, invades personal privacy. So, those are some of the characteristics. Now, let's go to two major reports. One major report is entitled Fascism, America Becoming a Police State. At literally every level of the federal bureaucracies and of all the 16 major intelligence agencies that operate in total secrecy and in all major departments of government, I see the people running these as having many of these qualities and characteristics. Our banking institutions, our major corporations, I see them. Many of the people on television, both left and right, I see many of these qualities. You see, I have one little advantage. I've seen many people who've become very famous by manipulating other people. I know people who will have others do all their work. They rush in at the last moment. They go on the air, and they sound just great. They're respected and loved by people. But then I see what they're like off air. I've seen their temper tantrums. I've seen them demeaning people. I've seen their callousness. I've seen their manipulation of how they get stuff that no one else gets. And how they create fear in people because of their capacity for retaliation. I've seen it. But the public doesn't and won't. Because the public doesn't want to know the truth about many of their heroes. Because it was the illusion they were in love with. Get close enough to people and you'll see who they are. So when we look at many of our problems today and how simple the solutions are, and then you look at the people running the banks and the Federal Reserve, running government agencies, then you know why we're not going to have these solutions. Because in my opinion, these are sociopaths. They don't care about us. They don't give a damn about us. They care about themselves. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours now in our talkback segment. 888-874-4888. Mind you can talk about any, ask questions on any segment you'd like. And it's not just limited to that. Now, one more thing before we take a break here. I saw that on GaryNoll.com, the Facebook, I was looking because I'm going to be doing next week, I'm going to take one day and on the air, on our show, and I'm going to show people how to do some of your spring gardening. How to get prepared, what kind of soil to use, what to grow indoors or outdoors. Maybe you're in an apartment, not a problem. You can grow in an apartment. If you have a backyard, what kind of backyard? If you have a rooftop. So I'll show you how to get started and what to grow. Anyhow, I noticed that someone was saying, could you address this? And it was about a health writer talking about how she was so happy that she had vaccinated her two children for the measles vaccine because now there is some measles being identified in New York among some adults and children, a small number. And would I address this? Yes, I would. Well, first, it's a person's right to vaccinate or not. So I do not interfere in a person's freedom of choice. But here is the other side that this person who is a health reporter should have known. There are multiple compensation court cases for vaccine injury that have ruled in favor of the injured family due to the MMR vaccines, measles, mumps, and rubella. It's been linked to autism and other neurodegenerative diseases. They paid out millions of dollars. So if you're going to say that the vaccines are safe, then you better do your homework, which clearly you have not. We have the evidence. Separately, much was made of the Wales measles outbreak, but later it was discovered that almost all of those contracting measles have been fully vaccinated. In fact, quote, 95% of children in Wales are fully vaccinated with the MMR. So it was 95% of the people who were getting measles who had been vaccinated for measles, showing you the vaccine did not work. Next, what we're learning from the Wales measles outbreak and deaths is the vaccination with the MMR may be contributing to hex pneumonia when children contract the virus, which is life-threatening. Hex pneumonia aggressively strikes the very weakest immune systems and children that are their weakest after receiving vaccines, particularly multiple vaccinations simultaneously. Also in recent years, as reported by Dr. Vera Schreibner in Australia, and I spoke directly with her on this, we are discovering atypical measles outbreaks solely among those vaccinated. This was first discovered and identified in 1963, shortly after measles vaccine came to market. Almost every measles outbreak going back to 1970 from today has occurred among the vaccinated. Why, then, has not a single case of measles been seen among the unvaccinated Amish during a stretch of 18 years? Now, although vaccinated children will record antibodies, a 2008 study showed that about 25% did not have protective titers, meaning the vaccine was useless for 1 in 4 children. China, during the past couple of years, has been having widespread measles outbreaks. Chinese health officials are noting that the current vaccine is no longer useful for those strains. Now, the mumps portion of the measles, mumps, and rubella is failing rapidly. This according to Public Health Ministry in England. Merck, the inventor of the mumps vaccine, was caught last year making false claims about the vaccine's efficacy when two of Merck's former virologists, Stephen Cranling and Joan Wachowski, filed a false claim document against the company under the Whistleblowers Act. So Merck's own virologists are now claiming fraud. This is why the majority of all mumps outbreaks have been among populations of children highly vaccinated with MMR. In fact, in New Jersey, 77% are vaccinated. One study showed 97% of all mumps cases are in vaccinated children. Once again, it is a person's right to vaccinate or not. But if you're a health reporter, take your time, do the studies, unless you're willing to be morally responsible for everyone who takes your advice, vaccinates, and then has autism or developmental disorder or some other serious condition from that vaccination. Let's go to Long Island and say hello to Ronald. Hi, Ronald. Your turn. You're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Gary. A couple of weeks ago on the PBS NewsHour, they had announced that the following day they were planning to have a segment about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but as far as I know, they never had it on. And I'm wondering whether this was too controversial for them to have on their program. People at PBS seem to be very self-congratulatory about.
You are right. I can't answer that because I don't know what their motives for not doing it are. I do know that there's a major new scandal, major scandal, when it was found that a major report that's been on the air for some time on PBS is paid for by a person who has very strong Koch brothers type of associations. In fact, the Koch brothers have funded programs on PBS, and that, which is their right to. But we should know that in advance. This program was paid for by individuals who support a particular point of view. Then those people who believe in that point of view can accept that point of view. But for those of us who don't, and we want some fair and objective information, then we have to question it. I have written many letters to PBS stations about programs I've watched where pharmaceutical companies supported the station, supported that particular program, and therefore there was very one-sided, and that's what you're going to find. All right, so it doesn't, if it was their motive to not have an open, honest discussion on the dangers of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I could understand. However, I have no proof of that. Let's say hello to David from New Jersey. Hi, David, your turn.
How you doing? I don't think that socialism can be, like, brought up, and everybody in this country is so conservative and inbredly conservative that I don't think they can possibly make it. But I do think that something like compassionate capitalism can be brought up and used as a slogan and have a department that no capitalism can exist unless it's compassionate. And, you know, has to be judged with the right department or something. And, you know, don't you think that could work?
Question for you, David. How long have you been listening to this program?
But nothing can exist,
David,
unless it's compassionate.
You made that statement, and we heard you. Now, question. How long have you been listening to this program?
I've been listening for about 15 years.
Okay. Then you know that 2 years ago, twice within a month, I did a whole hour special on what I called ethical or compassionate capitalism.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
Okay.
Well, I know Gandhi had, I heard that Gandhi had something like that too.
Yes, and the rule of was this. When you have a society, you cannot deal in absolutes. You cannot say that you should be all socialist. That would be impossible and stupid. We're all capitalists, especially the capitalism we have today, which is vulture capitalism. And I gave examples. If you remember, maybe it'll trigger if I show you examples I used, where there was an effort to privatize the fire department. And in a community where a person did not have fire insurance, he had a fire, the fire trucks came, but they were not allowed to put out the fire, and the man's house burned down while the firefighters stood there and watched it.
Yeah,
and I remember that. Well, I reported that.
Yep.
And I said at the time, there are things that we must all have in common and respect, like we should have public education. That's a common. We should have the protection of our ports and waters, our lakes and rivers, our air. That's a common. We should have the police department and in all areas, not just in the expensive areas, but all people should be equally protected from intrusion or violence. That's a common. The Coast Guard, that's a common. Now, when you consider just those, and also your street lights, would you want to walk at night on a street that if you couldn't afford to pay the bill, that you had no lights on?
Right.
You don't think about these things when you're making grandiose, radical statements that, you know, everything should be by self-determination. And if you can't do it, then you shouldn't own it. That kind of radicalized or inhuman or lacking human libertarian point of view is wrong. But there are principles within each of the philosophies that are right. So you have to look at what can be shared in common that benefits everyone, rich or poor, doesn't matter.
Well, there can be no greed. That's the whole thing. Well, congressmen and senators that are into greed and businessmen, I mean, that has to be like the major thing, is no greed can exist. And if greed is found, it has to be eradicated.
Okay,
it's not easy to do, I'm sure, but I'm just saying that the compassionate capitalism slogan, like the 99%, that's like a better slogan than trying to go for socialism, you know, to convince people of. I mean,
okay, but pull back for a second, David. And take a look. You cannot legislate against greed, because greed doesn't come because of the legislation. It comes from circumstances that people exploit to their advantage, to their or some group's advantage. When you hear people like the president of France railing against rich people, I consider that insensitive and stupid, because I know a lot of wealthy people who are very compassionate, very giving. They're very ethical. In fact, the vast majority are. We make the mistake of looking at the examples of the very wealthy, those 1% of the 1%. And we then say anyone who is successful beyond a certain point obviously got there because of greed, not true, or because of using the system, not true. Most of the people today in the United States who would be considered upper middle class, and by most people's standards, wealthy, or wealthy, but not in the mega group, those people didn't get it by hedge funds, equity partnerships, derivatives, outsourcing of jobs. They didn't get it because they inherited it. No, they got it by, more often than not, owning businesses. They got it if they're an entertainer or an athlete. They work for it.
Right.
Now, how they spend their money is their business, but I'm not going to say that someone should be limited in that capacity. I'm saying that they should be, hopefully, their parents gave them a sense of ethics, their religions gave them a sense of morality, and their parents, where if you have more than you need for yourself, then shouldn't you be concerned about the needs of others? Where you don't have to be told or shown a tear-jerking, you know, a commercial to say there's something should be done. We shouldn't have to be motivated to do the right thing. Our part of our nature should want to extend ourselves to help other people. If we have a gift, we should give a gift. That's my philosophy. And most of the people I know are like that. Most of the people who have done well have no problem sharing. What the problem is that those people who are the very wealthiest, we're talking about the 1% of the 1%, all right? Those are the people who, these are the psychopaths. These are the people who control industries, control banks, control the Federal Reserve. They control the White House. These are the people that own the interest in the insurance companies that created Obamacare. And if it hadn't been for our efforts, would have created Clinton Care, which was equally bad. Their interests would have been served, not the people. We wouldn't have been healthier or living longer lives or children born safer because of them. So you have to refocus that, because about 60 million Americans, 60 million, are living comfortable, good lives. And those are the people who are frequently tarred by those who don't understand how many levels of a society that you have and who are the policymakers. These people are not policymakers. These, you know, you work hard your whole life. You own a bicycle shop in Darien, Connecticut. It's been in your family 80 years, and you finally go down, you know, to Fort Myers and live in some gated community, and, you know, you're playing golf and you're happy. You deserve that. That's your right. I have no right to say you shouldn't, how you should spend your money. You know, and yet on the other hand, if you say to someone, we should all be given more taxes, the average person is going to say, why? Where are you spending my taxes? I don't have a problem paying taxes. I pay a lot of taxes. But do I have any say-so at all of how it's being spent? And if I see it's being wasted, if I see it's not helping the commons, making it a better society, building roads and bridges and putting people to work and de-ghettoizing the society and having health care for all, if I see that my dollars are not going to have third-party candidates and opening up the political platform so we hear a Dennis Kucinich, we hear a Ron Paul, we hear a Jill Stein, we hear Rocky Anderson, we hear Ralph Nader, if my money was going in any way to support the commons, and meaning the common forums, if it's going to make sure we don't have gas explosions because the infrastructures have to be dug up and repaired and modernized, and if I know that my taxes are going for public education that is not demeaning and limiting to the teachers, to the students, or to the children, if I know my money's not going to a military-industrial complex, not going to spying on people, not going to supporting through subsidies the ultra-wealthy corporations that don't need that but want it, demand it, then I have every right to complain about how my taxes are spent. I'm sick of bureaucracies becoming metastasized cancers where they never, long after they should have been closed down, they continue to proliferate for no other reason than because nobody wants to give up what they're given. There's greed on an institutional level. Greed at every level destroys. All you can do with greed is you can embarrass it by showing people not to support it. These are greedy companies, boycott the products. These are greedy people, don't support them. If I know that the people who run Bank America and J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs and Walmart and Kmart and CBS and NBC and ABC and Fox, if I know that the people behind them, whose face I may never see and name I never know, but if I know they're doing this based upon greed, not need, they have everything they need. They've got yachts and mansions, and most wealthy people don't spend the money on themselves that they get. They only spend a fraction. They invest it. And they invest it not in America, not in taking our tax dollars and supporting small businesses opening up around the United States in every town and reigniting a whole new CCC revolution, the Civil Conservation Corps from the 1930s, to rebuild America and help it grab carbon by planting plants and trees and regreening of America, putting people to work. No, these people put money into derivatives, credit default swaps, whole new bubbles in emerging markets. So then instead of saying we need higher taxes, lower taxes, it's not about that. It's about seeing that our taxes are used in a way that actually helps us. And no one is paying attention to that today. And when I say no one, I mean no one. That discussion is not happening because we've radicalized the conversation. So where you're either socialist or you're mega corporatist. We don't realize the nuance of everything in between, where we actually live. and what we could do to reverse all this. So that's why I said the solutions to our problems are simple. And we're not willing to do that. And the trouble is, a lot of the people who say that they're against the very wealthy are not. Because when you go in and buy their food, shop in their stores, watch their television programs, look at their commercials, buy their clothes, buy their cars, bank in their banks, use their credit cards or debit cards, you are then enabling them. And that means that you are supporting your own demise. If we had one flat corporate tax that you could not get out of, and it was low, then we would no longer have offshoring of funds, we would no longer have debt the way we do, we would have money in the federal banks, the state banks, to help all of us, and we could turn this around. But that would not be to the advantage of those who are the policymakers. That, I see, is the problem. Hey, thank you very much, David, for calling in. I appreciate it. Now let's go to my guest who is standing by, David Crow. David.
Hi, Gary.
Nice to have you with us
again.
David, by the way, is president of the Alberta Reappraising AIDS and Rethinking AIDS group. He has got a show, a very important program called The Infectious Myth, heard today, in fact, at 2 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network. And what I like
Tuesdays.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
David, take a look for a moment at, because you look at science, and you look at science that's become corrupted, not just in AIDS, but in all areas, where journalists won't touch it, activists won't touch it, the people live by lies, and yet this can adversely affect us. For example, Harvard University's business school commenced a program on commercializing biomedical and life sciences. That's unique. And now one of the most respected editors in all of the history of the New England Journal of Medicine, who's a professor at Harvard, just came out with a article saying she doesn't trust most of what we see in science journals anymore because she knows how easy it is to corrupt it. Talk about the corruption of science and how it's done, how it impacts us.
Well, yeah, money, of course, is what has corrupted science, like it's corrupted a lot of things. My last guest at this past Tuesday, Dr. Peter Gottschy, who's the head of the Cochrane Institute in Denmark, talked about his research for well over a decade into mammography, and he concluded that mammograms are not just useless, but they're very harmful because women get treated with biopsies, with removal of part of their breast. They deal with lifelong psychological damage, fear, and pain for nothing. But what mammography is very good at doing is generating money. It, of course, the actual act of producing mammograms costs money. Even if the woman doesn't pay, it's coming out of taxpayers' dollars. And then there's all the biopsies, there's all the treatment. It generates a huge amount of money, but at the expense of women's health, their feeling of self-worth, their living constantly in fear. And he also mentioned the PSA test, which is now heavily promoted for men. And again, it's a useless screening test. It causes overdiagnosis, and it generates huge amounts of money for the urology establishment, for the cancer establishment, and it leaves a whole bunch of men impotent and incontinent. And that's what happens when money takes over science. And, you know, one of the most important things in science is believed to be peer review, and most people think, well, that's what ensures quality in science, but it actually is what ensures that people toe the party line. Because once a clique of scientists gets in charge of a particular area, anybody who tries to publish or get a grant for something that questions the fundamentals of that, whether it's a particular area of cancer, psychiatric medication, or AIDS, or some other infectious disease, they will not get research funding. The tap just gets turned off, and without money, modern science just doesn't function. And so on my show, I hope to get many guests who will talk about the corruption of science I'm very excited to have the authors of Dissolving Illusions, which is a new book about vaccination, who will be coming on in a few weeks. David Rasnick will be talking to me about aneuploidy as a real trigger for cancer and not mutations. People need to listen to the show to really understand exactly the significance of this. But basically, it means that cancer researchers have totally gone down the wrong path, looking for the cause of cancer. They're trying to look at mutations, and they just can't find the cause. But what it means is there's endless research chasing one mutation after the other, but not actually producing better health than anybody.
David, this is so needed. We used to have on WBAI one of the finest science programs ever. Eileen Zelis did it until someone didn't like, you know, that program, and some program director, and purged it along with several others that should never have been purged, but that's the politics of the station. So we're happy to know that you're doing this important science program. Thank you very much. The program is called The Infectious Myth, every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. David Crowe, one of the finest science reporters in the world. Just two quick program announcements. This Sunday, we're going to be from noon to 6 o'clock giving out some free samples to show people the joys and benefits of traditional African food. Each week we're taking a different food, giving out free samples, because I want to promote African cuisine for the next month, and I'm going to promote some other continents' cuisines. And we have a chef, Naoma, from Senegal, who is there. You can talk with her about the dishes of Africa and special ingredients that are brought in. It's 89th and Broadway. So it was wonderful last week, and it's really nice to know that that's going to happen again, because I love to show people different things. Now I'll be giving free samples of another dish for my new cookbook. I'm letting the public sample some of these, not all of them. Of course, I have 300. Last week it was gourmet cupcakes. Got great reviews on those. And this week I'm going to do some wrap food, and I won't tell you what it is, but you'll get a chance to sample it, a whole portion, and then you'll give me some feedback. All right. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. As you know, you have a lot of listeners from California. I have an email from Beth from KPFK writing in, and she said that we really miss you out here on KPFK. Are you ever coming back? She said no one ever told us why you left.
No, I won't be coming back, because it's the energy was no longer compatible, nor the people working at the station, nor did I like the idea of raising money for people who will go on the air and attack people as they did. It's just I don't want to be a part of any station, and I won't be, that is not living on some principle of humanistic respect for others. Okay?
Okay. A lot of people call in about that, and they also email me, so that's what I'll tell them.
Yeah. So, no, I was asked to come back. I was even offered a daily show, and I said no. No, not going to. No, there's a time in life where chapters change, and you got to go forward, and that's it. All right? They've got $100 million. They don't need me to make any more money for them, and that's all I seem to have been doing for 31 years. There was no respect. Without respect, why be in any relationship? Anything else?
Actually, I have something else from someone from PFW, another Pacifica station, and this is from Linda. She says, I've listened to you for over 15 years on WPFW, and the program director suspended you for telling your audience the truth about why we hadn't received our premiums. I was outraged. Everyone I know who used to listen to you on the radio now listens either by the telephone or to PRN via the Internet. No one at WPFW tells us a thing about our missing premiums, clear back from 9 months ago. I feel that we've been used and abused, and I'll never support another Pacifica station again. Ever. Says P.S. I work in one of those bureaucracies in Washington, D.C. that's bloated, corrupt, and insensitive. And she says, you understate it.
Oh, all right. I've left messages for the station manager I've left messages for the executive director of Pacifica, because at the end of the day, it is Pacifica in Berkeley that is responsible legally for all the outstanding premiums. I'm no longer on PFW, though I was invited back. I chose not to go back because they abused my audience by taking their money and not giving the premiums from October. They did it again in December. And when I brought this to the attention of the audience that they didn't get their premiums because the money was spent on elsewhere, the program director didn't like me saying the truth. And so he gave me a week suspension and I just never went back. I don't want to be a part of these. But remember, you screw around with the audience, you take their money and don't give them premiums, you're up against federal laws. They better understand that. If any of these people understand the law and call the Federal Trade Commission and complain, then things will get really hairy for PFW and Pacifica. And you got a lot of people, thousands of people, that are not made whole. They better do a better job in apologizing to people, telling them the truth, and getting them their premiums. Thanks a lot, Luann. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we begin a series on the U.S. Postal Service, which is in the crosshairs of Congress right now, claiming that it is a behemoth that must be tamed. It's losing money and it's just unmanageable. But our guests are telling us something quite different. So we begin a series on the Postal Service today.
Will you be including the fact that Nancy Pelosi, I think it's Nancy Pelosi, it's either Feinstein.
Yes,
Feinstein.
She's in our crosshairs today.
Okay, Feinstein's husband has the exclusive contract to sell these closed post offices for what will amount to an enormous amount. We're talking about tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, and therefore is part of that course promoting the idea that we should close them. We look forward to hearing what you have to say, you and your guest.
Thank you.
Utrice Lead right now.